Put a little stank on it, Addison.
Welcome back to the Grinder, folks. We are back at it again. Another week of hustling, bustling, and busing these kids to school. What's up there, James O's?
Man, just digging in, trying to get it ready for the holidays. You know, everybody, it's like a lot of people go on cruise control. And we are definitely not getting that luxury over here.
So you say that in the sense of who is doing the holiday slide?
Usually things calm down as far as like new business during this time, which it's cooled off a little bit. It allows us to do a lot more catch up stuff. Man, our industry is just so crazy, which I've talked about on prior podcasts, but our industry is just so crazy right now. Like things are just not slowing down. We're still just trying to get it all done, man. Trying to put 10 pounds of shit in a 5 pound bag.
Yeah, I usually say that the other way around on accident.
5 pounds of shit in a 10 pound bag.
Yeah, it doesn't seem as hard, does it?
It definitely isn't.
No, I guess it's just still dirty work.
Yeah.
But I will say we're seeing something similar because interest rates lowered. When the economy looked like it was doing better, as we all kind of thought that it was going to do. Interest rates dropped to sevens, low sevens, and everybody kind of started creeping back in. You're having those good conversations, having those better conversations. So it'll be interesting to see as we move forward what actually what actually transpires, because these interest rates go down, dude. It's gonna be a shit show.
A shit show in what way? Like it's just gonna be crazy busy. So, like, is the inventory doing well?
It's still pretty low, dude, in a majority of places.
Really? So, if you put something on the market that's priced like it should be, I mean, is it going under contract pretty fast still?
For instance, I listed my property yesterday. And we within an hour we had three showings lined up for it.
Holy shit.
It within an hour because it was priced correctly. It's in a good location. Like you get those two as far as a combination, it's gonna move. So it's still a seller's market. It's just a strange seller's market because you also have those other properties where the market just needed inventory so bad that people were just jumping on anything to get it. And because their first 10 options didn't pan out the way they wanted them to, now people have a little bit more choice. And so they're going for the better properties. And that's where you're seeing the competition.
I mean, is there still, do you still see bidding wars and stuff? People going over to get it?
Last weekend or the weekend before, we had a property that was listed correctly. It was in a good location, and it came on the market on Friday. It was under contract by Sunday with I think eight offers on it. So
Damn.
it's still heavy, and but the filter is still on, right? That filter comes off when interest rates lower.
Yeah.
A lot of these people that are holding out because they're waiting on the interest rates to drop, you and half the country is doing the exact same thing. So,
Yeah.
be cautious of that.
Yeah, but that's probably, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, I mean, it's probably a bad idea to wait, right?
My personal opinion, I mean, that's because I went back and forth of, I could just rent a spot for 6 months, wait for the interest rates to go down, and then, jump back in the market then. But I was like, man, not when I can get a deal on a property. I just kind of find that second option that people wouldn't go for until the first one didn't pan out. Make a move on that, get it a little bit lower, get the seller paid closing costs, like all of the stuff, and then interest rates will go down. But it's the same price to rent as it is to purchase right now, depending on what price point you're in.
Yeah, that seems like the area that is absolutely, I mean, I know house prices have, of course, went up considerably, but some of the things I see for rent absolutely blow my mind.
Yeah.
Like I'll see somebody post something on Facebook, you know, like it's a duplex, one side of the duplex, like two bedroom. And I can't remember what the rate was. I was like, holy shit, there's no way somebody's going to pay that rate for Griffin.
Yeah.
Right. Nothing against Griffin, but you know, I mean, it's not like it's Buckhead. Okay. And then I noticed there was some comments under the post. So I like clicked on them and man, people were tagging people left and right. Like, hey, this is available. This is available. And I was like, holy hell.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know?
It's pretty crazy, dude. I was looking at, you know, just trying to get some numbers together. Two bedroom apartment up by me was almost $3,000.
So that's like, just, that's, I mean, I'm sure there's people listen in different markets, but like that just seems crazy for our market.
Yeah. Yeah. Because back in the day, dude, it was like $1,200. But I'm sure you can still find that. I'm sure you can still, but it really just depends on the location. You know?
Yeah.
But it's wild. It definitely is. Cause I'm like, dude, if I'm going to spend that, I may as well go ahead and buy the, you know, the property and I'm going to. In either way, and then by the time the lease is up, like refi, so it's like I'm just going to go ahead and just purchase. But it's an interesting place to be in. That's for darn sure. Someone who's looking to buy right now, you know, you have the leverage in certain circumstances, but in others you don't. You got to be willing to pick the pony up.
What do you see commercial property doing?
So commercial is interesting right now too. It's still low inventory on commercial. But you're seeing the businesses that weren't operating at optimum position, and those are coming. You know, they're getting out of their leases or whatever it might be, and there's a lot more opportunity. Because there's a lot of folks that are getting out of the commercial side of things.
Yeah.
So there's going to be opportunity. It's interesting to see where, you know, legislation goes and all this other stuff. So.
Yeah.
Definitely has opportunity in commercial as well.
Yeah, I've just always liked commercial real estate.
Yeah, well, that's because it's always panned out really well.
Well, but the thing is, I mean, I've only owned one rental property, residential rental property.
Mm-hmm.
If I would have kept that sucker, I mean, I'd be making bank right now, you know?
Yeah, but it was also at the time, I mean, at the time that we were looking at selling that property, it was, you know, it was a different market.
Yeah. It was. And I was like, this is ridiculous. Like, I don't want to depend on this thing. One person paying rent and all that. I was just like, this is a pain in my ass. I don't like it at all.
Yeah. It's definitely, you know, no one can predict where the market goes. Like everybody right now is like 50-50. You know, people who are in the market understand the fact that, you know, interest rates always come down during presidential elections. And so it's like, go ahead and get into what you want, and then interest rates will come down. However, on the other flip side of that, you know, you also have to look at the economy. But we've also been in this position before when COVID hit and everybody was like, well, the economy's going to crash, everything. And then what happened?
Huge. Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't think we'll ever see anything like that again, at least not in our lifetime. But
yeah,
I think it'll get close. We may not hit that same peak, but I think we'll be close. As far as residential real estate goes.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the good news is though people are buying higher, interest rates are up, but if you're coming out, you know, there's still a ton of opportunity where, like, if, you know, I mean, if I sold right now compared to what I paid, you know, I mean, it gives me, I mean, there's so much equity. It's a massive, massive down payment on something new, you know. I could still see where people are not slowing down, still buying.
Yeah, yeah. It's It's interesting to see, because there's some people that are like, dude, I'm they understand, they can see what the fuck's happening, and they start making their adjustments, and then you have the other folks like, oh, market's gonna crash, I'm gonna hold off. You know, I don't see that happening. Everybody was buying cash, everybody's buying conventional loans. Like, it's hard to compete when your comparables, the guy down the street from you, paid, you know, $100,000 above asking in cash. Like, yeah. That's the strongest comparable house that you could possibly have. Like, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I got some reserve set back for many reasons, but one of them is if something did happen, I don't want something to happen because it would negatively affect me in other ways, right?
Right.
You know? So, I mean, I don't want things to crash. I will tell you though, I mean, I got stuff set aside. So if it does, I can scoop up some good deals. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's the position, as crazy as current circumstances are, like the position that I'm in right now, you know, being able to have those reserves going into, if anything, like you said, if anything, you know, shit hits the fan, being able to have some of those reserves to be able to kind of pick some stuff up. You know, that's where people make their money. It's in the lows, it's not in the highs.
Yeah.
Big money.
Yeah.
So.
Very cool.
Yeah. What you got going on your side of things?
Man, I mean, there's still a ton of opportunity out there for us. I mean, like I said, this market's been very, very tough. There's money to be made, but it's the work that has to go into it is unreal right now.
Yeah.
But hey, I mean, it's making us cleaner in our processes. You know, I think as well, it shakeups like this kind of clear out some of the low performers, you know, in the industry, the ones who probably maybe should have been in it to begin with, that kind of thing. And then I think it gives us, you know, there's people who also start thinking about, like, dang, do I want to do this anymore? You know, I've had a good career. Maybe this is my sign. I need to get out. It's time. So we're trying to take advantage of those as they come up, you know, finding deals that are good both ways and allowing people to go on to their next phase in life and us taking over. So there's been good opportunity with that. Prices are still inflated some. But people are more willing to negotiate, you know, they start thinking about not having to deal with all the issues right now. Cause it's tough, man. I mean, it's not only tough for your client's sake, you know, and trying to keep them satisfied with through products you actually don't control. Right. So we're being smart there. There is things we could do. So we've picked up new contracts and gotten really, you know, really sharpened the pencils on the ways that we can find ways to save money, things like that, which is tough to do in this market. Putting a lot more of our energy in it. But, you know, man, just trying to stay on top of what these carriers are really where the pressure's at, because the carriers are losing money. So the carriers are coming back and putting additional pressure on us saying, well, we don't want this anymore. Hey, here's a list of stuff we're just not going to keep anymore. So like they're clearing their books. So I might have a really great client who just had, you know, a couple of claims issues or something. And then carrier saying, hey, we're not going to keep this customer. Really? We don't want this client anymore. So now we got to scramble and go back. Then we got one carrier, man. They just said, hey, we're just completely pulling out of the state. Oh, we're going to actually just shut down the whole product across the nation. And we're non-renewing all of those customers. So I got a carrier doing that. Thankfully, we didn't have a very large relationship with them. Just wasn't a big fan of them, like in the grant compared to some of the other relationships we have. But, you know, like all those customers, now I got to go back and see where I can get all these customers placed in a tough market.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, imagine you got that client who bought the house with a 3% interest rate. All of a sudden that mortgage company comes out and goes, hey, we're not going to keep this mortgage after January 1st date. Don't care what the contract says, right? Like we're out. So you would have to go back and try to get them a new mortgage on January 1st, like with new rates. That's right. Like what we're having to do, man. And that, holy shit. I mean, that's a lot, you know. I mean, that's tough. And we're trying to navigate it the best we can for customers. But it's like, you know, we don't have a choice in it. They don't have a choice in it. And trying to take care of them.
And I could see how difficult that could be from like the outside in. You know, you're looking at a client, they're looking at you as their insurance agent, and they're like, you know, why are you doing this to me?
Yeah, we get plenty of that. But, you know, when I get that, it makes me realize like we haven't done a good enough job of educating how we serve you.
Yeah.
Let's make sure we clarify that going forward, right? Like, hey, here is our purpose. Here's what we do. And because it's quick and easy to go, hey, that's not me, that's them. Mm-hmm. But you know what? Like, that's the way they see it. Hey, I do business with Osmond Chapman. I don't do business with Carrier ABC. I do business with you. I expect you to advise me, right? So, you know, clarifying that message and making that better, it's amazing. I mean, I've had customers for years go, hey, do y'all do life insurance or do y'all do home insurance or boat insurance? I'm like, yeah, we do all that. And it's like, how do they not know that? They don't know it because we don't do enough good enough job of telling them about the other products. Like, either they're oblivious or we're not making sure we're communicating and how we can serve them and how we facilitate products for them. Right. You know, so I mean, that's the number one thing. How can we do it better? Yeah. But man, it some days it's like trying to do it with our arm tied behind our back, you know. We're figuring it out.
Yeah. But that says a lot about where you're at and the ability to adjust on the fly like that is big. But then it also comes down to the educating the client on the things that you don't, that they may not understand, right? Because we've talked about this before is, you know, people don't know what they don't know. And especially when it comes to a client, you know, if they don't know the process and you can't educate them on the process of like what you sell, the whole process of what you're there for, mm-hmm. then you're not going to be able to make a sale, right?
Yeah.
And there's a reason, like on our board in the bullpen is, why would anyone use you as the real estate agent, right?
Yeah.
Like, because at the end of the day, if you can't answer that, I bet you Bob down the road can.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why he's selling the way that he is. So if you want to get your game up, that's number one. Understand your foundation and your education.
Yeah. Well, and another issue on our side that we see a lot of, we have to fight against is you sell a product, you don't sell the agency.
Amen.
Right? That's what happens when the truth is products are the products. You know, what we should be selling is the agency. Because a lot of what we do, someone can go direct to the carrier and get a policy. But like, I'm telling you, and I mean this in the best way, if you do that, you don't know what you're doing. It may make it all simple and easy. You can go get that 15-minute quote somewhere. You can get that 5-minute indication somewhere, and you can bind it right online. But I promise you, like, you don't understand the industry. And there's 100 different opinions. And several of those opinions are right on the correct way to set something up. But if you don't really truly know how to analyze risk, like, yeah, you could probably go outside and build a front porch or a back deck too. But if I take you that have never done one and put you against the guy that's built them every day for the last 20 years, I can promise you his shit's going to be a lot more sturdy and a lot more square, and he's going to know all the mistakes not to make. And that little mistake may not be obvious today, but it could be really obvious when it comes claim time. And that's the difference. So, you know, I don't see direct to consumer as a threat to me or even my competition. There is a couple of areas where it works, but God, I hope you know what an actual coverage does for you. Like that one coverage, they'll break it down into one sentence. But if you actually read the policy jackets, that may be 4 or 5 pages describing what that one coverage does and does not do.
Yeah.
You know, like, so unless you're going to go read all that and understand all that, you're not getting the same as what you get with me. So once again, goes back to making sure we explain how the agency actually serves them, what value we bring to them. Yeah. I don't determine rates, you know?
Yeah. Because, you know, the, as a consumer, the only thing that you're actually looking at is how much this is costing me a month. You're not paying attention to what it is. What is my deductible and how much does it cost me? Fair and simple. Right.
Yeah.
And that's, there's a reason why we send, like, our clients will come over, you know, pre-closing, and they'll come over and they'll have their policy in place. Like, you know, this is the insurance agent that I've used all the time. And a lot of times what we'll do is we'll just say, hey, you know, I'm going to have you connected with James just to have a second opinion. He'll be able to look over your policy and tell you where you're missing and where you're hitting. And, you know, worst case scenario, you have a conversation, you understand your policy better. On best case scenario, you switch over and you actually get the policy you need, right?
Yeah.
It's always an easier conversation to have. When it's just like, hey, here's your second opinion. We do the same thing with lenders and stuff like that. But.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and there's a lot of things to navigate and make sure done right. I know that's the same for a lot of people listening to your industry. But you know, I'll tell you, like during the tough times, I mean, the most important thing is having a good team and then disseminating, making sure the proper information is getting disseminated to that team.
Right.
And, I'm very fortunate. I do have a great team. We do struggle with disseminating the information because sometimes it's just a lot. You know, it's just a lot. You know, if I work with 10 main carriers, you know, they get the bulk of the business, 10 of them. And then out of those 10, every month there's some update or every couple of weeks, you know, and trying to keep all that steady. And then the random carriers we work with, man, it can just be an overload. But having a good team around you, the harder the time gets, the more important it is.
What is considered like a small insurance company? Not like the broker side of things, or I don't even know if you would call yourself a broker, but so like you have like State Farm. What is like a small State Farm?
I don't know the current averages. I'm sure it's up some, but I think your average agency, Main Street agency, is probably going to have somewhere between $2 and $3 million in premium that it's managing. That's probably about a standard size agency.
Gotcha. That's interesting.
So a lot of them, especially on the smaller side, like that size, they talk and think about everything in premium. You start getting into the bigger players, they talk about an actual revenue. What size of your agency? They talk about an actual revenue, not the premium side.
That makes sense. Because they're talking in a different ballpark.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hmm.
You know, when you start becoming, you start really, you know, you're considered probably Main Street. You're going to run across some agencies that got $5 million, you know, in premium. You start becoming I want to be careful because I don't want to downplay anybody who's got a $2 million agency. There's nothing wrong with it. They're happy. Yeah. I think you start getting to another level when you're over $10 million.
Yeah.
That's when it starts, like when you become, that's another stage.
Yeah. I can see that. That's,
I guess. Yeah. But I bet you, if you took all the agencies across country and averaged it out, like you probably have $2 million agencies.
Yeah.
Small, like you see a one man shop, you know, they're a couple of years in, they could be under $1 million.
Yeah.
So
just bringing in what they bring in.
Yeah. I mean, there's guys that flat out just start out scratch. I mean, the day they open their door, they literally have $0, you know?
And how is, you can answer this if you want to, but how is someone who gets into insurance, how is that paid? So you guys don't get paid, you guys get paid per policy?
Yeah, so you're paid a percentage of commission. Well, let me rephrase that. Sorry, you're paid a percentage of premium. The carrier sets that. And look, you know, I'm thankful for the fact policies are built around commission. Everything, every dollar this agency makes here is based off commission from carriers. Good. Because if we don't do a good job, we lose policies, which makes us lose money. We are incentivized by the money we bring in. And we do not set the rates. So, you know, and this is an extremely competitive industry. So the good side is if you're dealing with an agency that's solid and has morals and tries to understand things and educates and trains and learns industry standards and does things right, they're writing policies correctly. The problem you have is in times like this, an agency that has no scruples, you know, they'll sit there and cut stuff out or raise, you know, they'll do, you know, a bad thing we see like on home policies is they might go to a percentage deductible where they don't have to go to a percentage deductible. So most home policies might have $1,000 or $2,500 deductible. So if you have a claim, right, your roof's destroyed by hail and it's $20,000 to replace it, they're going to minus that deductible out of the claim. Well, percentage deductible is based off the percentage of the dwelling coverage. So if you have a $300,000 house that now has a $20,000 roof claim and you have a 5% wind and hail deductible, that means now you're responsible for the first $15,000.
Holy moly.
And in a $300,000 house these days, I mean, that's smack dab middle America, man.
Yeah.
Like most people aren't just sitting around with $15,000 to go drop on the roof, you know?
You just, so you're just dealing with what you can at that point.
Yeah. So. And then, well, here's the other part. So let's take that scenario, right? You just found out you got a 5% wind and hail deductible. You got a $20,000 roof claim. And the carrier drops that on you. And, you know, you bought this home policy through the mortgage guy's recommendation, right? Because the mortgage guy, what's he worried about? He's trying to make numbers work, right? He's not trying to do you wrong. He's just trying to make numbers work for the most part, right? Everybody's trying to get deals done and get you taken care of. So real estate agent's trying to get you the right rate or right sales price, right? Purchase price. Mortgage guy's trying to get all the numbers to work so you can buy this house, this dream house that you and your family have been wanting, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, man, last little thing that's coming in, especially on a close deal, right? Got to get you a fair rate on that homeowner's insurance. So it gets kicked over to the agent that's just supposed to get the cheapest price he can to make that deal work. So what do? They sit there and they manipulate all the coverages. So they're missing a solid water backup and ordinance and law coverage and personal injury protection and like all these little nice little bells and whistles that flat out, I wouldn't write a policy for anybody without it. And then they go ahead and just throw on that percentage deductible, boom, 5%. So now you're in the claim situation. It's the first time you had to deal with a home policy. Maybe it's the first time you ever talked to the agent since you bought the house. So now you're in that claim scenario and it's $15,000 and you ain't freaking got it. Well, guess what? Now the insurance company is going to say, hey, we know that roof is totally tore up. If you don't fix it and fix it quick, we're going to cancel you. So now not only are you going to come out of pocket that money, you're on the hook that if you don't fix it, that the carrier's got something that's now uninsurable.
Yeah.
They got a house with a tore roof that caused more damage that they may be on the hook for. They're gonna tell you to get it done. And if you don't get it done, they're gonna cancel you. So, you know, like I said, man, it's a slippery slope. I know we're getting deep on this stuff, but
yeah, but it's
so big on educating.
Yeah. It's so important to be able to have a group of, because not even just inside of you go to a real estate agent, you go to a real estate team, whatever you choose to go through to purchase a home. It's so important to be able to have that person who is able to get you in contact with these other folks. Mm-hmm. And you know, even if you're buying a car, right? The guy that you may have been using for the past 10 years and you've never had a car accident for the past 10 years, and then boom, 11 years hits and you have a car accident with the new car you just purchased and you have no idea where your coverage is. And I think it's a big thing that consumers just don't think about, because I don't think about it. You know, I just have trust in the fact that you're going to take care of it.
Yeah.
because at the end of the day, you know, it may not be the cheapest. I have no idea, but it may not be the cheapest, but it I know that I'm covered.
Yeah.
And that's the peace of mind.
Yeah, man. And I get it. Like, hey, I want something. I want to go get it. It's where we live in these days. Yep. I want to order something off Amazon. I'm always like, what the heck, when it's not going to be there this within 3 days. I'm like, oh my God, what am I going to have this till next week? What is this? Like, what year do we live in? Right. I mean, that's the way we're built now. And I get it. We got some amazing things to get stuff to us quickly and make things work fast. So yeah, I understand. Hey, I decided on this vehicle. Now I need to make it work to my monthly nut. Is that number going to hit what I need? I want to buy this house. Dude, I was way under budget when you helped me buy my house. But I mean, how many conversations we have about driving it and getting it tight on that number? Like, I wanted my number tight.
It was many, many conversations.
Yeah, you know, so like, I mean, I get it. It's the world we live in. You just, not all products are created equal, man.
Yeah.
They're just not. And you know,
it's not the same as you like a car, you buy a car. It's not the same as you like a house, you buy a house. There's so many nuances that go along with that, right? Like with buying a house, you have the property inspected, you know what you get, you know, 99% of the time, like you know what you're getting into with a car.
Yeah.
Buy a brand new car, you test drove it, you know the materials, you know the product, you purchased Ford before. And with something that is so detailed like insurance, it's very important, I think, for a consumer to be able to understand that it's not just what you're paying a month and how much your deductible is. It's so much deeper than that.
Yeah, I mean, it's insurance is nothing more than transfer of risk.
Yeah.
That's it. Now, I get it. I'm an insurance guy, so of course I'm biased. I'm overinsured in a lot of areas, okay? But, you know, if everything continues to go as it is, I won't be destitute if a claim happens because I have all these coverages built out. If I drop dead, you won't see me on a GoFundMe page, right? Like, friends aren't going to come over and scrape together a few bucks. You know what I mean? Like, also my family would be taken care of. Also, here's the other piece that a lot of people don't think about. If I ran a red light and I hit you, okay, in my car, and I truly hurt you, like, let's say I put you in the hospital for a week, I messed you up, you couldn't, like, your leg didn't work right anymore, something like that. Like, I took away some quality of life. I have a policy that's built that would actually take care of that. I'm actually responsible enough not only to try to take care of my own stuff, but to try to take care if I am responsible for somebody else, something happening. Yeah. And that's a big thing. Like, I get it, life's not fair, but man, you know, you go injure and hurt somebody, like truly hurt them, like there should be something there to take care of them.
Yeah.
And I make sure I have enough coverage in place to do that.
Yeah.
So, you know, mistakes do happen.
Yeah.
And then, but yeah, you're right. Like, you're talking about buying a car. Like, okay, when you get quotes, you're basically, it's like calling and saying, hey, I want this vehicle. Okay, we can get you that vehicle for this price. Well, the guy down the street will do it for this price. But you can't look at it. You don't know how many miles are on it. You know none of that. You don't know what color it is, any of that stuff. And you're just taking it at the dollar value. Well, sure. That's what you're doing with insurance when you just price shop it. I mean, there's a value to everything. You know, you got to work with somebody who can help you understand the value in the policy.
Yeah. And there's so many different people in so many different positions where, you know, just having insurance is what's important. Right. But I think it's one of those things that it would be very important, or it would behoove a lot of people to be able to be in that position of thinking, like, worst case scenario, where am I at?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, that's
last thing I'll add, just a quick tip. If you are shopping, like, ask the agent where they, if you're working with somebody and they've put some pricing together, hey, outside of price, like, why should I do business with your agency versus another agency? Mm-hmm. Look at some Google reviews, man. Ask them about where they have their policy and why they have it with that carrier. Like, they should be able to tell you something great about the carrier they're looking to place you with with not having to mention price. Even if the price should be icing on the cake if it smokes what you got, you know. But and there, look, there's a lot of comparable policies out there. I'm not saying it's got to be this one carrier over another, but I will tell you flat out, there's contracts we could have right now, especially at our size. Even in this crazy market, like there's contracts I could pick up left and right that I have refused to do because I do not believe that carrier will best serve my clients. And even when I pick up a new contract or something I feel good on, I will not just move current clients to it. We'll do some testing. We'll see how some claims go, verify some things, and they'll go, okay, we're feeling good. Let's open the gates a little bit more. Even on quality carriers, I do that. So, like, but there is some very large name brand carriers out there that anybody on this podcast, if I said the name, would be like, of course I know them. And I do not have a contract with them, even though I could have one any day of the week. Won't have it. I just, they're crap in my mind. So I'm not going to put my clients with it because I wouldn't have my own policy there.
Right. Yeah, no, that's a big move, man. It's a big difference in how you come across and the way that you do business versus, you know, not saying that everybody's negative, but there are a lot of different bad seeds in different businesses. Yeah. Right? We've seen that. But well, cool, man. With that being said, take all this information. It's not as focused on business today as it was, but it also is. There's a lot of nuances in what we were talking about and what James was bringing up that you can actually take and apply to what you're doing in whatever field that you're in, especially if you're in, you know, product-based business versus, you know, labor-based business or whatever it may be. There's a lot of things you can implement and how you actually look at how you're making the sale, how you're going about the product itself, how you're going about the supply, you know, whatever it is. You can apply these things and just be able to look at it a little bit different and evaluate where you're at. So with all that being said, guys, do not forget to check out our sponsors, Jocko Fuel and Origin USA. When you get to the checkout, put in the code GRIND10, GRIND10, and save yourself 10% off. James?
Hey, I do want to add to that. I think this definitely, we didn't went down some rabbit holes of our own profession, but like, all of these principles apply to you and your business. Like, analyze them. Hey, if your business is one that's a lot easier to show how it's all about you and your craftsmanship or et cetera, then great. But there's a ton of ways to differentiate other than price. One thing we talk about here at the office is like, think about something being low cost. When I walk in the grocery store, you know how many items I walk past that are only a dollar or two? Why? Because that product serves no purpose to me. I don't need every product, right? Just because it's based off cost. So don't tell me that every bit of your clientele is based off of just price. Because no one is that way. Everybody's based off of value. Everyone at some level. There are certain things they just don't value. I have people who call us or come in here and have zero value in insurance. They actually despise it. I've had people go as far as telling me, well, it's just the government taking advantage of me because they require me to carry auto insurance, right? Like, there's people who feel that way. There's zero value to them in that product. So there's also going to be people in whatever you sell as well. But there's majority of people, or any of them, if there's almost no value or a lot of value in that, it's all based off of value, not just price. So if that's all you got to focus on, you are going to lose day in, day out. So with that, Grinder out.